today we're talking about autism, and there are a few things that I want to talk to you about. And that's really, you know, what happens to autistic kids when they grow up. And then, you know, because we're finding out that later in life, we're discovering that there are more people, not kids, but adults who are within that autism spectrum. So, mm-hmm. you know, the neurodiversity in the workplace has got to have had, I think, at least a small effect on how we work with each other and things like that. So I maybe want to talk a little bit about that. And then yeah. there's something that I found very, very interesting is that the females are less likely to be detected as far as having autism. And I always thought it was the opposite. I always thought there were, you know, females were detected early on and found out more. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, I think that's because of the media and what I saw, or at least what was stuck in my head as far as, and I'm not trying to
so be. There's so much confusion, right? It's like a new, it's a relative, autism was first discovered by, contemporaneously by an American psychiatrist and by a German psychiatrist in 1943. Mm. And so that's not that long ago. That's 80 years ago. That's like within our lifetime. That's my mom's age. And so misinformation is a problem anyway. I'm sure there's misinformation about breast cancer, or like pick the chronic condition. There's misinformation. But especially when it's something so new, there's so much confusion. There's yeah. the science is developing so fast. And why would you stay on top of it unless you had someone very close to you that was autistic? Like, you shouldn't be on top of the studies. I'm on top of the studies. I'm a late diagnosed autistic, so I know this stuff. But I think it's good to share because we are about 15% of the population. So that's a coworker. That could be your partner. It's definitely a cousin. You got a couple cousins that are autistic, I promise you. So just understanding the neurodiversity landscape, I think it makes everyone better citizens.
You know, I want to ask about that because over the past, I don't know, 15, 20 years or so, that we're finding more and more children, you know, we're not talking about later in life, but more and more children are within the autistic or autism spectrum. Is that because the spectrum is getting wider and wider? Is that one? And two, is it because of possibly, you know, all of these preservatives and other things that we've been all of?
No. That's bunk science. There is, don't confuse causation with correlation, right?
Okay.
So there are a few things that happen. So one of the things they'll say is the increased number of people with autism is because of older parents. So we do have more older parents and we do have more people being diagnosed with autism, but that's not causal. But mm-hmm. those two things are happening. We do have more preservatives. Monsanto's insane. The food supply is wild. It's bad. And we are diagnosing more people with autism. Those people, those things are happening contemporaneously, but they are not causal. Most people, most kids that are detected, if they're detected using the new methods that we've developed over the last 10 to 20 years, will be caught when they're 18 months to 2.5 years old, which is when they're getting vaccines, happen at the same time. Not causal. We know it is not causal, just happens at the same time. And human brains get confused by that, yeah. right? So it's like, it just happened to happen at the same time, all these changes in society, but they are not causal. We know what causes autism. I'm going to give you the big news flash. Here it is. Brace okay. yourself. Genetics. You are autistic, you have an autistic parent who has an autistic grandparent. I can help you identify them on this show. It's not that hard. It is similar to identifying your Italian-American grandparent or your blue-eyed grandparent. So we have all these stories and like, how can we figure it out? It's not that complicated. There have been autistic people since the dawn of time. We made the first stone tools. We invented calculus. You know how Copernicus was really annoying about did the earth go around the sun or the sun go around the earth? Autistic guy. Like the crazy train guy growing up. Autistic guy. Like we we have been around forever. We just had a name for it in 1943. That's all that happened. We got a name for it.
The thing, it's, and again, I'm not, I'm just saying it the way that I think everybody who does not have a friend or that does not know neurodivergent people or autism, whatever, however you want to put it.
Yeah, kids, but whatever, yeah.
We watch these movies and we've seen it and you go, oh, autistic kid, because we're looking at the facial features, right? Right. So, right. And we would listen to you and look at you and go, what does she mean that she's, you know,
right,
autistic?
Yeah, so like, so for instance, the Rain Man character, who's one of the most like famous autistic characters, he was the one who had like that incredible recall and photographic memory and stuff like that. He's not autistic. He is that character, however, is neurodivergent. So you could say on the neurodivergent spectrum.
Ah.
But that's not autism.
Yeah. Can I stop you right there and ask you?
Yeah.
So give us the definition, or what is that difference between autism and a neurodivergent person?
Okay. So you know how some people, and I forget which one it is, but some people have earlobes that are split and some people's earlobes are attached. And when you were in biology class in high school, everybody went around and checked, and then you checked your parents and one of your parents would have split and it was recessive genes. And okay. What neurodivergence is actually something in your brain called mTOR proteins. It's mTOR. If you have more mTOR proteins, which is just like having a dangling earlobe versus a straight earlobe, whatever the weird one is, if you're blue-eyed, the recessive gene, you have more mTOR proteins. And what mTOR proteins do for neurotypical people, like for the brown-eyed people, is they prune your synapses. So you know when they told you growing up, you only use 7% of your brain and you're missing all this information? That's because your synapses are being pruned. Everybody's is, mine are, yours are, everybody's synapses are being pruned. There would be too much information to take in. We'd be too overwhelmed. Because neurodivergent people happen to make more mTOR protein, they do not have the same synaptic pruning. They have less synaptic pruning. So autistic people on average take in 42% more information just with their senses, with their five senses. We're taking in 42% more information than neurotypical people because those synapses aren't being pruned. Now, you can look at that in two ways. You could say that's a defect or a deformity, and we should, and there is development now, we should get medicine that will do that synaptic pruning. That is possible. We can, in theory, fix it. Or you could say it's kind of like blue eyes. That would be creepy to fix. Like, we could make all the 15% of the world that's blue-eyed, we could make them brown-eyed with this pill. Should we give them a pill? Or does it make the world more beautiful to have some blue-eyed people and some brown-eyed people? And then whatever, the whole spectrum of eye colors. So that's what neurodivergent means. It means most people, you know how bell curves work. So let's just say roughly 80%. Most people are going to have the kind of synaptic pruning that would limit that sensory input. And then the people on the edges of the bell curve are going to have more sensory input. And that changes the way we see the world. So, you know, a famous autistic person, that is Sherlock Holmes. And when you watch Sherlock Holmes or hear Sherlock Holmes stories, you're like, God, how did he solve that mystery? That was so cool. I didn't even see the feather on the floor with the crumb from the crumpet, like whatever. It's because he's autistic, so he has more information. And what I say is like, hey, that makes the world more interesting. I like blue-eyed people and brown-eyed people and green-eyed people and hazel-eyed people and gray-eyed people. Like, let's bring in all the people. So, but it changes your worldview. And it's also why people thought Sherlock Holmes was weird. It's why Sherlock Holmes becomes a drug addict, which happens to most autistic people. It's why Sherlock Holmes deals with suicidal ideation. He ends up dealing with the police, not just for his job, but in bad ways. That also happens because we are often misunderstood because we're seeing stuff that neurotypical people aren't seeing.
Well,
now, there are co-occurring intellectual disabilities. There are co-occurring physical disabilities. That is not what autism is. So you might have Down syndrome. You might have another intellectual disability, but that's not autism. That's just a co-occurring condition. About 27% of autistic people also have an intellectual disability, and that can include being non-speaking.
And I'm glad you said that, because I think a lot of times a lot of people will mix those two up between autism and Down syndrome. We typically look at what we see right in front of our faces. And also the way you're explaining things, as far as neurodivergence and people who are neurodivergent, all that information that's bombarding them. And like you said, we know people who are neurodivergent. Famous people or people that aren't so famous, but we typically say that person's crazy,
right?
And it turns out, like you said, there's so much information that's coming in because their neural synapses, it's not clipping things, they're being bombarded. And I think now I kind of, at least my fantasy of understanding it, is that is why they are so smart, or they are very highly aware in certain senses. In some cases,
then also so dumb, right? Like socially, Sherlock Holmes doesn't always make great social decisions.
Yeah.
Puts himself in danger, maybe puts other people in danger. Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, Einstein. These are all famous autistic people. Tesla, all famous autistic people. Jefferson, who were also not well liked in many ways. Oh. And where would our society be without them? And what if we could be a little more accepting?
Yep. And I'm going to reference your Rain Man, because, you know, like you said, he's just kind of walking around. Then all of a sudden, all whatever it was sticks, 52, 52, 52. And it's like, how did he know? He just sees. They just see it. So with little kids, when they grow up, I mean, what happens to the kid?
So that's interesting, right? So now we understand neurodivergence a lot better. And a lot of the research I'm talking to you about is the last 10 years. Like, this is new. This is happening now. And so schools have gotten so much better. Protocols have gotten so much better. Insurance has gotten better at recognizing and supporting supports in schools and out of schools, and IEPs and No Child Left Behind in America. All this stuff has happened. And so now we're catching more and more kids that we could have caught. We're catching all of our original studies in the 1940s were done on white, wealthy boys. And that's just how it was. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody was trying to hurt anyone. It's just how it worked out. So we had all these studies, and they weren't catching kids of color. They weren't catching women. They were often not catching queer kids. And a lot of that has to do with masking. So, like, if you know you're gay and you might get killed or hurt or shunned or not fed, you're going to cover up your symptoms differently. With women, same thing. Girls are socialized to be nice and be polite and behave. And so often they would cover up those symptoms, whereas the more privilege and the more power you have, so white boys, you would let your freak flag fly because you were less likely to starve. Right. So we didn't catch them. Now we can catch many more people, which is great. As we're catching these kids, and because we now know it's genetic, one of the questions that is asked in the screeners, first of all, your parents are interviewed and your grandparents are interviewed. So if you're like a 3-year-old kid, they're not going to ask you questions. They're going to ask for behaviors from your parents. And one of the questions they're going to ask, or many of them, will start to help you identify, oh, I must be the autistic parent. One of us or both of us are autistic, or maybe both of our grandparents or all four of our grandparents, but there is a recessive gene somewhere. And we know that. And so what happens is more and more adults are being diagnosed. Mm. And that means your coworker is showing up and they're asking for accommodations. They've been taught, because their kid is getting these accommodations at school. They can use headphones. They can use a quiet room. They can leave a meeting if they're overwhelmed, or a, you know, class meeting, school class, whatever. And so now the parent is seeing the accommodations for their kids, seeing how their kid is improving at school. They're figuring out they are neurodivergent in some way, autistic, ADHD, maybe they have dyslexia or dyscalculia that they've just been dealing with. And they're like, oh, I would like some of those accommodations at my place of work. And so now your coworker gets to leave early and come in late, and you're like, oh, great, everyone's autistic these days.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Everybody's going to be claiming, hey, I want
But it is actually true. It's 15 to 20% of us are neurodivergent. Now, do blue-eyed people need accommodations? I would say more blue-eyed people need sunglasses. My friends with blue eyes are very quick to have their sunglasses ready because it's painful outside. Short of that, they don't need a ton of accommodations to be as good at their job. Do neurodivergent people, if you want to get good results and not be annoyed, yeah, if you give us more accommodations, you're going to get better results. But now we have to deal with our own sense of what's fair. Should there be accommodations, or should it just be easier for you if you're neurotypical? Like, let the neurodivergent people suffer. I mean, you get to decide that. But I think it makes everything better for everyone. If your partner's autistic and you know it, there are three or four super easy things you can change. The accommodations they make for kids in school are not that hard. Mm-hmm. And those changes can make life better at work and at home without being that much of a tax on the neurotypical person.
What would you say one of the simple changes at a workplace or school could do?
Yep. So one of the big ones is, I call it a Zen den, a quiet zone. You might not be able to do a whole room. One of my clients that I work with just has a shoji screen, a corner, and a chair that's hers. But we need more breaks. We're getting more input, and neurodivergent people need more breaks. Now, it's on the neurodivergent people if they have the intellectual ability to do this. Sometimes my partner needs to help me because our needs change depending on how stressed we are. But to say the accommodation I need is some quiet time right now. But if you've ever gotten in a fight with somebody, I had a friend who explained this to me once about like overwrought metal. Like when you're working the metal too hard and it's never going to take the shape you want it to because you've just like overworked the metal. Mm-hmm. If you've ever gotten into a fight with somebody and it was just going in circles and you were never going to get anywhere, that happens faster for neurodivergent people. So having a deal with your boss or with your coworker or your partner that says, if you need a break, you can call timeout. Maybe you simply say time out, and there's somewhere quiet that you can go that's your own space. So you can think of this like a breastfeeding mother's room can be co-purposed. If you have Muslim coworkers, you might have a prayer corner that you can use a part of in the same way. But just a quiet Zen den where you can go. Ideally, in that room, you would have a stim toy. I'm holding one now, and it's just like a little bubble popper. I will often have, this is a crystal that I'll use. That's just like, it's a rock. It's a smooth, soft, like river rock. But I have lots of stim toys like this that I'll have in there. I'll have an eye mask. I have an Alexa in there so I can play music. I am sensory seeking. So when it comes to smells, so like I'll have, this is just like an oil that smells nice so I can do some deep breathing. So you could just have a sensory kit that works for you in a quiet space that you can go.
I'm going to interrupt and put something in there because I recall several years back where a lot of kids were getting in that habit. Remember the little spinner?
Yeah, fidget spinners.
They said not in school. I remember there.
But what I would say, and they do this, is it not in class, but right. in a place. So
but I was thinking it was on the bad part of maybe the teacher in the school, because you don't know if the student's doing that to help them calm them down, and if you're just saying stop it, put it away. But
yeah, fidget spinners are very popular with autistic and ADHD people. I find, I can do a fidget spinner under the table and not be distracting. A 5-year-old or a 7-year-old might not have that kind of control, and then it's distracting the whole class.
Yeah.
So it's really about crafting what's going to work for you, for your family, for your kid, for your partner, for your workplace. But having a quiet space where you can go with no judgment, we can pick up the fight here. Like, I'm not running away, but we're not going to get anywhere. When I'm in fight or flight, I'm freaking out. I'm not being reasonable. I'm saying crazy things, you know, like not crazy, but just like unhinged. They don't make sense. Talking more, I'm not going to get better. I am now too overwhelmed and I need a sensory break. So that's one really easy thing everyone can do, but requires a little bit of understanding.
Okay. Yeah. That there's really no cost involved in that for a workplace or, you know, school. So that's a fantastic idea. I'm going to kind of go off script, my script, and ask you this, because we talked about, or you mentioned, you know, it's certain things are causation, but we said this is genetics. So what are the moral implications? Because we are at the point where we can change a lot of things to correct things. We start correcting? Because if I'm 20 years old and I do these tests and I find out, I'm on the spectrum of.
What about in utero? We could find out if your baby's going to be autistic.
So should we start correcting those things?
Well, what do you think?
Well, you know, the thing is, initially I would say, well, yeah, we should correct those because we want everybody to fit in. But then again, on the opposite side is what you mentioned this too. What would this world be like if we made everybody fit in? All those geniuses, all those certain ideas wouldn't be there. And we wouldn't be in this place today.
Isn't that interesting? Right.
It is.
So this is why I say autism isn't a disease. And it's why I use identity first language. So I say I'm autistic. I do not say I'm a person with autism. But if I had cancer, I would say I'm a person with cancer, or I have cancer. I would like the cancer to go away. Could you please fix that for me? Mm-hmm. Or I have heart disease. I don't want to have it. But I am autistic, and there are many downsides of being autistic. I can list them all day long. But if you gave me a pill to fix my autism, I wouldn't take it, and most autistic people would not take it either. About 80% of us say that we prefer identity first language, so we prefer to be called autistic. And we know that the people who are trying to be supportive and say person with autism, which is also saying fix autism, do the genetic editing, kill the babies, fix the adults with autism. That's what you're saying when you say a person with autism. Mm-hmm. You're saying kill out our species. And we're saying, do you like bridges? We invented them. Do you enjoy calculus? You're welcome. Like, do you like computers? That was us. Do you play Pokemon? You're welcome. Like, Star Wars, would you like it to go away? Because it was built 100% by autistic people. The entire Industrial Light and Magic is an autistic company built for autistic people by autistic people, including George Lucas. Would you like to kill the baby fetus, George Lucas? Or Steve Jobs? How about Elon Musk? I don't know. Some days, like, it's a hard call because we don't fit in. But where would society be without us? Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
You ready to get rid of the Constitution? It doesn't happen without his special interest in France, that is where his obsession came, his special interest in architecture. Those are autistic special interests. That's why the Jefferson Library is so incredible. That's why he was able to write the Declaration. Like, that is the magic. So I say great minds think different, and we need to learn to be a more diversity-friendly society when it comes to our brains as much as we are when it comes to our bodies.
Yeah. Well, you've got all the answers.
There are a lot of autistic advocates out there. It's confusing because of the co-occurring conditions. So, for instance, one of the things that's really hard about being autistic, and again, it's related to the synaptic pruning, is many of us deal with hypermobility. So if you've ever enjoyed Cirque du Soleil, those contortionists, the little bendy people, almost all autistic. Most circus performers are autistic, especially in that new style of like Cirque du Soleil, right?
Yeah.
And so that condition of being super bendy almost always correlates with something called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is very, very bad. It kills people. And it is a horrible, horrible condition to have to deal with. So, do I want to cure EDS? Yes. Do I want to cure autistic people? No. If we got rid of autism, would we get rid of EDS? Yes. But I think we can get rid of EDS without doing that. So,
so you opened up another little can, not a whole bunch of ones. But so, all right. So now I'm here. I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, it's like, wow. Then I think I know all my friends. Ah! Just about everybody is neurodivergent, but
it's 20% of people.
EDS, it's like, okay, so do they have a shorter lifespan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Autistic people's average lifespan is 56 years old. Now, in part, that is because we are much more likely to commit suicide.
Okay, so it's self-induced, and it's not...
but we also have high occurrences of lupus, mast cell disease. If you still see people masking for COVID, very often they're autistic people because we have a lot of immunodeficiencies that are all connected. So the effects of COVID and the percentage of autistic people getting that long COVID are much higher. I think 30% of autistic people get long COVID, but something like 50% of long COVID is in autistic people. So, you know, sometimes you see somebody masking and you're like, why are you still masking? Well, we're dealing with different challenges. And there's definitely a lot of co-occurring medical conditions that I believe should be treated medically. Like, I'm a Western medicine person, but I don't really care. Western medicine, Eastern medicine, you want to sit upside down and have someone stick needles in the bottom of your feet, like, do whatever you want. Those are medical issues. One of my goals with the Autistic Culture podcast that I host is just like, let's separate out, because Irish people have medical issues too, but we don't try and fix them being Irish. You know, like, there are diseases that are associated with certain ethnicities. More African Americans have sickle cell anemia, but we aren't like, well, we could just kill all the black people and then we'll get rid of sickle cell anemia. Like, no, let's get rid of sickle cell anemia. So... but yes, our life expectancy is much lower. Oh, we do have very low rates of cancer. Extremely low rates of cancer.
Very interesting.
Fascinating. I'm excited about that one. Got to grab the victories where you get them.
Yeah. Well, I can see where, you know, one would, and I'm not condoning, I'm not accepting or any of this, but I can see and understand where if somebody took their own life, because I can see where I would call it a burnout. All that information is coming in and you get to the point where it's like, I've had enough. I've done enough. This is too much.
Yeah.
And again, I it's not anything that I accept or condone or anything like that, but I can understand where somebody says that was the reason, or this is the reason why I think about it. But hopefully,
and especially because so many people are undiagnosed, like, can you imagine if we could prevent suicide by having a Zen Den with some stim toys in every office building?
How cheap is that, too? Right.
Right. Like, that's not, we don't need a call center or employees or a manual. Like, it's almost no work. It's almost no money. And we for sure could save lives.
Yeah. Dr. Angela, you or just Angela.
You could just call me Angela.
You mentioned your podcast. So I'd like for you to let everybody know your podcast, where they can go to listen to your podcast, because you've got some great information. And you have a website, too. And I mean, you have, you're the founder of Difference Press. You're an author, you're a speaker, a lecturer.
All the things.
Yeah.
So fun. I'm actually working right now on a lecture that I'm doing for the Academy of Academic Publishers on how to ethically use large language model artificial intelligence to help their neurodivergent authors, which a lot of scientists and people in academia are autistic. So I'm working on some programming for that right now, which is super exciting. I think of myself as a largely positive person, and a lot in the autism world is pretty rough. There are a lot of podcasts on how do we fix it. There are a lot of podcasts on weird vaccine conspiracy theories. Like, you can go and get lost in a rabbit hole of the weirdest information in the autism world. And our podcast, which you could find at autisticculturepodcast.com, is none of that. It is a celebration of all things autistic. It is lighthearted. You can listen with your family. It will be enjoyable whether you're autistic or not. It is a romp through history where you will meet famous autistic people like Emily Dickinson, the famous poet, and learn about how her autism, so her lack of synaptic pruning, made her an amazing poet. Or Hans Christian Andersen and the Ugly Duckling story, which is the founding myth of autistic people. We grow up in a world of ducks, and then we come to find out when we're diagnosed, oh, I'm a swan. That's why I was so terrible at being a duck. In the Autistic Culture Podcast store, we have a shirt that says, not a duck. So you have lots of autistic people around you. We make up, like I said, neurodivergent people are 15 to 20% of the population. It's a spectrum. So it's not that everyone's a little autistic, but it's that it's a bell curve. So you will see more needs in some people than others. And our show is a fun way to recognize all the places that autistic people have been in history. Parks and Rec, that Dungeons and Dragons, like you name it. So it's just a cultural exploration of where autistic people have made a contribution. And if you're walking around and you can think of Irish people or Italian people that have made a contribution to the world, we want you to be able to think of autistic people that have made a contribution to the world, like Questlove or Eminem, and enjoy what autistic culture has to offer. And then you could go figure out all the moral and ethical dilemmas that you brought up, but with a different lens, right? So then when somebody says, should we cure autism? Should we call people with autism instead of autistic people? Then you're thinking of it and you're like, oh, maybe I don't want to fix that. So we try and do it in a fun, lighthearted, entertaining, family-friendly way.
Well, you know, before we close out today, I want to find out from you, as we're talking about folks who are finding out that they are autistic later in their years. One is, how is it that they found out, and what can we do as far as tests go, self-test or going to a medical professional to find out?
Amazing, amazing question. So first thing is, many, not all, but many of the late in life diagnosed people are happening with that child to parent pipeline. So they were missed, especially women and especially people of color. I'm 50. So if you're anywhere over 30, you were probably missed in school. Because again, we just didn't have that research then. And by the way, if you were born before 1943, 100% of people were missed. And we were still 15% of the population then. So the closer you get to today, the more people are being diagnosed, but it's still largely underdiagnosed. So so that's the first thing. Then what happened is because so many parents are figuring it out, they're out there making social media content about being late in life diagnosed. And there are some amazing books out there and comedians. Hannah Gadsby talked about her late in life diagnosis and her amazing Netflix special. And so then people are seeing the checklists and you can look up. I recommend looking up by your gender and also your ethnicity might help. But checklist for women with autism or checklist for people of color with autism. And you will see things. And if you're checking off half of them, then look for some testing. And I recommend doing two levels of testing. The first level is there's online tests. You can find them on our website, but Embrace Autism is one of them. So you can take these online tests. They're not perfect and they're not complete, but the reason to get a professional diagnosis, which is what my co-host Matt does on the Autistic Culture podcast, the reason to get a professional diagnosis is if you need accommodations at work, and it would be helpful to the size of your company to go in with a formal diagnosis to your HR department. It will be the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. They are required to make reasonable modifications for you. You will also need that for an IEP for your kid. If you are thinking you might need to go on disability, you will need an official diagnosis. But there are lots of reasons not to get an official diagnosis. Number one, there's a 2-year wait. Number two, it's often not covered by insurance, especially if you don't want to wait 2 years. It can be $5,000 to get a diagnosis. So it's expensive. And if you don't need a modification or a government benefit, go through a bunch of checklists. And if you're checking off 80, 90% and you're hitting in the 90th percentile on every single quiz, you can just call yourself autistic or neurodivergent. Like it's fine. Your job is to figure out what accommodations do you need from your partner and from your job to be able to love and work effectively. If you can get those without a formal diagnosis, just worry about what your needs are and getting the accommodations. If the label helps you, use it. If the label doesn't help you, don't use it. What's more important to me is that you get a Zenden or good noise-canceling earphones or really good prescription sunglasses so that you always have them handy. Like, there are tools, mobility tools, that you learn how to use AI, like I talk about in my book, The Equalizing Quill. There are ways that ADHD and autistic people can use AI to support their needs. Get your needs supported. Don't worry about the label, unless you need a benefit.
Very, very good information. And that's why I say, you know, I'm going to make sure that I have your information as far as your podcast and your website in our show notes, because I think if you're at all curious out there, you know, like Angela said, go out there and take those, I'll call them self-diagnosis tests.
They are little quizzes, autism quizzes. Yeah. Autism used to be called one aspect of autism used to be called Asperger's, and it still is in some places. We don't really use that term. It's not super helpful, but you could also look up Asperger's quiz, autism quiz, ADHD quiz. And they're, like I said, it's not a professional diagnosis, but it's going to give you plenty of information about what support needs you have.
Well, I want to say thank you very much, because it's brought up an interest in me, at least to read up more about it, find out, you know, like you were saying, there's a lot of famous people, past and present, who you may not know. And to think about curing and fixing it, it should be a no-brainer. No. Yeah. So,
well, that's my vote, Chuck. Thanks for hearing me out. There's a lot of other opinions out there, but I love autistic people, and the Autistic Culture podcast is just a celebration of that love.
Well, thank you very much for your time today. I really enjoyed this.
Thanks.